Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 21st. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of fun and frolic. Your calls, all of you collectors out there, call now. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here to answer your questions. So if you're a collector of coins or stamps, or perhaps stamps with pictures of famous coins on them, that'd be an interesting one. It's like the lime and the coconut. You give us a call now if you have a question. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins. And we have Bob Scott and David Tripp to answer your questions. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The fun begins after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Collectors, it's that moment you've been waiting for. We welcome back our stamp and coin experts. First is David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Department. He is author of Illegal Tender, Gold, Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost, 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and a cartoonist. Also joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, and head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams, or as we say up here, Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. David and Bob, welcome back to the show.
Hey, ho, how are you? Boy, it's been a long time.
It has been a while. How long has it been since you guys have been on?
Bob? About a year and a bit, I think.
Really? Is that long?
Yes.
What time flies?
Huh? I seem to remember the weather was not as good.
Yeah, beautiful today.
Is it nice out there?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Okay, because we have no windows here.
It's like a casino. 95 degrees and humid, which is
all right.
An improvement.
And you pump the oxygen here just like the casino as well.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Good. But there's a $1,000 limit on the table here.
Okay.
The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a stamp or coin question for Bob or David, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. David, we start with you. You obviously know a great deal about the 1933 Double Eagle.
Far too much.
In the news again, eh?
In the news again.
What happened?
We got another one.
Really?
We got another one. First, there was the one we sold for $7.5 million.
Right.
Okay. Then, about a year after my book came out, another 10 surfaced in a safe deposit box in Philadelphia from the family of a man called Israel Swit, who was fingered in the 1940s by the Secret Service as having been the purveyor of the stolen pieces that were recovered.
And did he work at the Mint?
No. He was an old gold dealer on Jewelers Row in Philadelphia, but he was being supplied, based on the Secret Service reports, by the cashier of the Mint, who was, a little sleight of hand at the office and supplying them to Mr. Swit.
Mm-hmm.
His family discovered 10 of them, even though Swit had told the Secret Service back in 1944 that he didn't have any more. Subsequently, they decided that they wanted the 10 coins, being that they were worth $7.5 million apiece.
Right.
It seems like a logical thing.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the government said, no, these are stolen property. And so there was a bit of a contretemps between the two. I was retained by the government to be their expert witness during the litigation, which went to trial in 2011.
This went all the way up to the Supreme Court,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The jury trial, I spent five days out of a 10-day trial on the stand, which was
fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to be a pinata for a profession? it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the jury came in within an hour and a half, 2 hours, siding with the government. They were stolen. The judge came down a few months later saying, yes, they are stolen. The other side, the family then appealed, and on a technicality that the government hadn't seized the coins within a certain period of time or forfeited the coins, the jury trial was overturned.
Uh-huh.
The government then appealed the appeal to the full appeals court in Philadelphia, 13 judges,
right,
who then decided the government was right. They decided overwhelmingly 9-3 or 8-3.
The government was right.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Hard to believe. Yeah. And so the family decided to appeal it to the Supreme Court, which ultimately, just a little over a year ago, decided not to take the case, and so the government did prevail.
So the appeals court decision stood.
The appeals court decision stood. Mind you, this litigation took a total of 11 years. Your government, the legal system in action.
Yeah, and I paid for part of that.
You did indeed. Yeah. Now, following all the litigation, there is in the back of my book a photograph of a 1933 double eagle that had made the rounds in the late 70s and early 80s before finding a private collection. The person who had purchased that back then, having seen all the litigation and followed it, and the fact that the government had determined and the courts had determined that it was stolen, voluntarily got in touch with the U.S. government and said, I don't want to own anything that's stolen property, and returned it to the government, surrendered it.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, if he held on to it, isn't there some statute of limitations?
No, because it's stolen property, and in the government, because it was government possession, there's something in the law called lashes, and we're not going to go into this is your hour of law.
Right.
But it basically means the government never gives up a right to go after its own property.
Mm.
And the records and the courts did determine that this was stolen property. And he didn't want that hanging over his head because it has been so widely publicized, certainly within coin collecting crowds, that it is stolen property, that the government has told me, the lawyers have told me, that if somebody else were to pop up with one, you know, sitting in their back pocket, it's now a criminal case, no longer civil, because knowingly owning stolen property, and they consider that everybody who would know knows that this is stolen property.
Do you think there are any more floating around?
My gut is at least probably four.
Really?
The Secret Service.
Is that including the one you've got?
Absolutely. How do you think the government paid me for my testimony? I think that the testimony, Secret Service in the 40s determined or they had information from Israel Swit, who was the man's partner, that they had 25 and at that point only sold 14. The math is starting to come together. We now have 21 accounted for. So theoretically, there are four more.
Now, if these are outside of the U.S., they're gone for good.
They're gone for good. Yeah. Absolutely.
So some rich collector in, say, Saudi Arabia has one.
Exactly.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. David Tripp is here. He'll handle the coins. Bob Scott is the stamp expert, and some very valuable stamps going on the market soon, yeah?
Very, very much so. The billionaire bond trader, Bill Gross.
Yeah.
He's selling
PIMCO?
PIMCO.
Right.
PIMCO was, and I think they actually fired him.
Yeah.
But anyway, he is going to put up 106 of his most prized assets at incredibly low estimates.
Why? Is he hurting for
cash? To attract bidding, but the estimates are essentially, I would say they're 20-year-old estimates.
Huh.
I think this is going to be quite a sale. There's at least, I believe it will set the record for multiple million-dollar items.
Wow.
In one sale. But there are some spectacular things.
Such as?
Biggest block of the 1847 10 cent, which is the first U.S. stamp, one of the two first U.S. stamps. It's a block of six.
Franklin on that? Who's on that?
Oh, please. George Washington.
Oh, really?
Ben Franklin's on the 5 cent.
I see what I.
But that's,
what do you know?
What do I know?
This is your show. You should study up.
There's a huge block of the 1869, the first stamp with an inverted center. That's got to be another $1 million. And probably my favorite, the first stamp, the missionary stamp of Hawaii, an unused 2 cent 1851 Hawaiian missionary, which is actually one of the stamps from the Sherrod movie with Cary Grant. They made it a 3 cent, but this is what it was based
on. It's the only known unused Hawaiian missionary.
It really is.
And there's something going on there.
You know what? Let's leave it alone.
There are so few, they've never actually positioned the ball.
Okay, our number here is 800. I got it. 800-348-2551. Let's grab one call before we take our break here. Debbie in Kent, Kentucky has been waiting a while. Hello, Debbie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Debbie.
Hello, Debbie.
Hi, I'm so excited to be on the line. I just wanted to say this is one of my favorite shows. I'm so glad you're both on. But I have a quick question for both of you. Mr. Tripp and Mr. Scott, I wondered what are the most fascinating items that each of you have come across in all your wonderful years of working with property?
Mm.
Bob?
I could do a quick one.
Yeah.
Well, having dealt with the rarest and most valuable stamp of the world, I'd had probably have to say the 1856 British Guiana 1 cent. But there are a couple of other things. I've had stamps that have gone to the moon, stamps that have been delivered in space, a stamp on a letter that was carried by Lindbergh, the first transatlantic mail.
Oh, cool.
Stamps that were carried on the Pony Express, sent by presidents, received by presidents, royalty. There's really no limit, David.
Well, obviously the 1933 holds a place in my heart and the bags under my eyes. but beyond that, one of my favorite coins, being a classics major, was the denarius, a little dime-sized coin that was struck by Brutus.
Oh.
To commemorate the murder of Julius Caesar. And on the back of the coin, on the front, it's got the portrait of Brutus. On the back, it's got his name. On the front, it's got his name. On the back has got the Cap of Liberty, the reason for the murder, flanked by two daggers, the means of the murder.
Wow.
And then underneath it is this little inscription, EID.MAR, Idibus Martius, the Ides of March. So it is, and you're a newspaper man.
Wow. I'm not a newspaper man,
but you are a reporter.
I could be a newspaper man.
You are a reporter, yes. And it's who, what, why, where.
That is so cool. All right, Debbie, thank you for a most interesting call.
Thank you so much, Debbie.
Thank you, Debbie.
We have to take a break here. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. David and Bob and Stamps and Coins coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Numbers 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. David Tripp is here to talk about coins and such. Bob Scott is here to talk about stamps and such. You can call us with your question or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Mike wrote in. And Mike wants to know about a 1963 $5 bill. $5. He writes, I have a 1963 $5 bill. Good start there, Mike. What is unusual about it is that the serial number and the U.S. seal are printed in red. Why was red ink used for the seal and serial number for this bill? Is this bill worth more than $5?
No.
No?
Or maybe a dollar more, depending on condition.
Yeah.
But banknotes are traditionally printed in multiple colors. They go through different stages when they go through the machines.
Yeah.
And the numbering is done separately. Bob's holding up a bill right there. Do we have multiple colors on
it? We have a green seal.
We have a green seal.
But red seals we know.
And red seals
blue
we know.
Blue seals we know.
Yeah.
Right. It's
black seals.
So that's
we
what
know.
A 20 looks like. Oh, I'll be darned.
You haven't seen one in a long time.
Working radio. It's been a while. That's terrific.
I won't be seeing this for much longer.
Thank you very much. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. So in our change jar,
yeah.
I found a $1, I think it's John Adams dollar.
One of the
goldish
the series.
Yeah.
Yes, goldish.
The interesting thing about this one, though, is it has letters around the edge.
Yes.
How do they do that?
There are various ways of doing it. There is a machine that actually imparts them. It can actually also be done during the striking process. Basically, the dies come down together, the metal stretches, and then they basically have a third die that impresses it in the end. And then they also have machines called that actually impart it separately. They can be done two different ways.
Of course, I get very excited. I say, I've got a valuable one here, and I look it up, and I find out that there's all sorts of misprints on these and double letters and everything. This one's perfect.
Perfect.
Well, yeah, absolutely perfect.
That, aren't you lucky, man? You've got a buck. But, you know, it's a buck to you, but it's, 75 cents to the government.
Well, that's
as long as you don't send it. You know, it costs them 25 cents to make. Goes into your pocket at a buck, and the government makes the difference. I think somebody at the Mint told me not so long ago that they actually are one of the few parts of the government that makes money. I think they clear like $400 million a year or something like that in profits.
So they make money by making money.
Exactly.
How wonderful.
Isn't that a nice trick?
Yeah.
You know, I find I give the government plenty, actually.
And if you were to forge your own coins, you could do the same.
And who says I don't? Let's go to Joseph in Kingston. Joseph, you're on.
Yes, how you doing, gentlemen?
Hi, Joseph. How are you?
I'm doing well today. I have a 1908 quarter.
Okay.
It's in good condition.
Good condition meaning really worn and crummy or really nice?
No, really nice. It's the detail in there is very good. You can see the little, I guess, I don't know what you would call them, that these Roman people used to wear. You know, it's a little halo type thing.
A wreath.
Yes.
Okay, so that's Liberty with the wreath. This is the Barber design, Charles Barber, and they went out of circulation, I think, in 1916. So you say it's not shiny or anything else like that. It's just basic gray, worn,
correct,
but not too worn. Yeah?
Correct.
Okay, well, it's a collectible coin in that condition. It probably sounds like very fine or extremely fine. Mm. And
It's silver.
Mm. Well, no, we're beyond the silver. We're beyond bullion in this case.
Okay.
So we're probably looking at, let's say, $40 to $60, $50 Ooh. To $75,
That's
something like
good.
That.
That's all right.
All right.
Well, thank you, fellas.
So that'll get you a dinner.
All right.
I hope.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
Well, there you go. But they won't take it at the restaurant, probably.
All right, Joseph.
Well, I've already picked out the restaurant, so I'll have to figure that out. But
fabulous.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. David Tripp, Bob Scott here to answer your questions about stamps and coins. And David in Rensselaerville. David, you're on.
Hey, yeah, man. I just got a suitcase full of material from England in which I find letters sent between my family from France to England and Africa to England during World War II, I and II, and they all have stamps on them. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if they're of any value.
It really depends. Are any of the letters censored? As in they have tape across them and they have censorship marks?
No. However, there were also, I also have a bunch of propaganda postcards that were paid for by the government that my dad sent back to his family that were, you know, obviously paid for the government saying that, hey, everything's okay over here. We're all okay. So I don't know if anything is worth saving or...
It's all worth saving because it's an interesting part of history and it is very collectible. People are absolutely fascinated by it.
By World War One and World War Two?
Definitely. Well, World War One is generally more sought after than World War Two, but purely for the reason that it's older.
Yeah.
And of course, at the moment, we're just coming up to the celebrations for the 100th. Yeah.
Well, we're just coming up to World War III. I mean,
then there's that argument.
In which case, we won't remember much about World War I much longer.
Although I don't necessarily suggest at the present time you go out and grab letters and stamps and start saving them. But with the...
How would I evaluate these? Would I take them to someone locally in Albany, in the Albany area?
Well, you know you could do, but first of all, where was your father actually serving during the Second World War?
My father was in Ethiopia and Sudan, so he was in the south, in South Africa,
right,
fighting the Italians. And my great-grandfather was fighting in France, so I have all of this correspondence between the families and these wonderful old stamps are on the outsides of these envelopes.
The
and,
letters.
Sorry
to interrupt. The letters, you still have all the letters that are inside?
Oh, yes.
You're probably going to find that just as a story, they might actually be more valuable because they are really a first-hand account of the war itself, which could.
More valuable to whom, though?
When there are people that actually collect the Second World War, so anything that goes, so the narratives.
Imagine, a strange expression, collecting the Second World War.
Well, it's a little bit, but it is not surprising to hear somebody collecting the Civil War.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah.
And if you can get a collection of letters that tell a narrative tale that run throughout the war that, you know, may involve prisoners, victories, strategy, movement of people, it may be a better thing. You're going to get the email address after the show.
Okay.
Why don't we give the email line? Give the email address right now while we're thinking of it.
Fine. It's coin and stamp guys, all one word, at Berk.com. And a scan of some of the things would be interesting as well.
I mean, that's
a
ideal.
JPEG of a few things would make it even easier.
Yes, right. I do think now, it's something.
One other quick question.
Quickly,
Either my grandfather or my father sent a charm bracelet to my mother, and it's a string of Elmina Koning 10-cent.
Okay, it sounds like German coins, König, King,
right.
Almond. That sounds like German coins and very low value.
Right.
Okay.
All right, David, thanks a lot for the call. And once again, that email address is coinandstampguys@berk.com. Berk is spelled B-E-R-K. Back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Meadow in Connecticut. Meadow, you're next.
Hello, I was wondering how I could start my own stamp collection.
Oh, that's fun.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
How you'd like? Well, the great news is, do you have letters delivered to your home?
Uh-huh.
Do they come to your house? Well, you know, the easiest way to start stamp collecting is just when you get a letter or when any member of your family gets a letter, ask them if you can keep the stamps.
Mm.
And then the best thing to do is these days, which is rather sad, because when I was young, we used to take all the envelopes and we used to put them in water and we used to soak off the stamps. You can't do that anymore.
How do you do it now?
You actually have to just cut the cut around the stamps
because
they're all self-adhesive.
Oh, that stinks.
But the best thing to do is, if you can collect the sets, try and get every stamp that's issued each year, and it's very easy to find online which stamps come out each year.
And does the post office still give little catalogs
and
if you go to the post office?
You can go to the post office. They'll give you pictures of all the new stamps that are coming out. And the way that I started was I called all my aunts, uncles, godmothers, and I said, I collect stamps. Please send me them.
Yeah.
And I think one of my godmothers still sends them.
There we go.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Meadow, for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Some new stamps out this year, huh? Real winners, yeah?
You know, considering we're now having to pay 50 cents a stamp, I really think they could be a little more creative.
What's wrong with Scooby-Doo?
Well, okay, I like Scooby-Doo. Always did. And actually, I'm quite in fond of the John Lennon stamp that's coming out.
Oh, there's John Lennon, too. Oh, great.
Lena Horne, I actually met once, so good for her.
Yeah.
But the general, I mean, there's a set of stamps on magic which look absolutely
they're horrible.
You've seen them, haven't you, David?
Yeah.
What do you mean magic? What are you, Doug Henning and such? Or
magic
no,
tricks?
it's a rabbit coming out of a hat.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's the artwork is kindergarten style.
For 50 cents, we expect more.
We expect
Times are tough.
Bob
gentlemen.
Always told me that stamps were art you could lick.
These I still stand by that.
Yeah, but these aren't art.
No, they don't really work.
Oh,
the great stamp is we've just issued, I mean, back in May, they issued a stamp to celebrate the centenary of airmail.
Oh, yeah.
Which is actually the centenary of, because the first airmail stamp, it was a set of three. The valuable one, which was printed in two colors, is pretty much the most famous stamp in the world, the inverted Jenny, when they printed one color upside down.
Yeah.
You'd think with the centenary of that, they would actually produce a pretty spectacular stamp. And it's just a fairly dull blue airmail stamp.
Yeah, but it's not half bad because it does look more like a classic stamp of the period.
Yes, I suppose so.
I mean, it's a biplane coming at you, isn't it?
But if you don't have enough of that and the color just displeases you, you can have the same design in red, which is coming out the month after next.
Well, there we go.
I mean,
so this is how Little Meadow could start collecting. Get the red, get the blue, and get Scooby-Doo.
Fair enough. Back to the phones we go. And Betsy, and where are you calling from, Betsy?
Weddingham, Vermont.
Ah, you are on the air.
Hello, Betsy.
Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I just inherited some coins from my dad, who purchased them just for an investment. They're not U.S. currency. They were large coins. They are large coins, about the size of a silver dollar. If I wanted to find the value of them and am interested in selling them, where do you suggest doing so?
Well, the trick is to go through them. I mean, are they mainly copper, silver, gold, a little bit of
everything? They look like they're silver.
Silver. Okay, sort of silver dollar sized, I mean fairly substantial size.
Yes, and they were in plastic, clear plastic cases.
Oh, clear plastic cases. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good sign or bad sign? Good sign.
It's not half, well, it could be bad, could be. Now, the cases, are they large cases? I hate to sort of go into forensics here, but are they large cases or small cases?
No, they're small, like plastic sleeves.
Like plastic sleeves.
Hard plastic. Or soft plastic? Do they have
soft, soft.
Soft plastic, sort of like something that you go and put into a three-ring binder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think, actually, the easiest thing to get started with this, if you can slap them on your scanner and take a JPEG and send us some images, we can probably give you a little bit of better guidance because we're sort of dealing in the dark here.
Now, I mean, Betsy could also go to the library,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And what book would Betsy be looking for?
Well, there were two books. For American coins, I would go to the Red Book, as we call it. It's the guidebook to the United States coins. It comes out every year, and if you get it off by a year or two, for the United States coins, that will give you absolutely everything you need to know.
Yeah.
And then there's a series called, you know, World Gold, World Coins by Krauss Mischler. Its nickname is the telephone book because it really is literally
huge.
Looks like a telephone book.
Yep.
The old telephone.
For those
books.
Who remember what telephone books look
right.
like.
And if you go through that, you might be able to identify things. It would at least give you a guide to some values. Condition is going to be the bottom line as always. For example, the gentleman who called a little while ago with the $50 coin, if it has been in worse condition, it would be worth $7. If it was in better condition, it would be worth $7,000.
Right.
Okay, so, and you guys, you buy them?
No, we do not buy coins.
No, and we don't do that sort of business on the program anyway.
No.
It's merely instructional. But if you want to email the guys, it's coinandstampguys@burk.com. And thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Courtney in West Winfield. Courtney, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Courtney.
I'm good. I had a coin question. I'm kind of playing the long-range game here. My dad was in the Navy back in the late 70s, early 80s, and he has this big tin full of different European currency coins from all over Europe. And I know those are still, you know, really popular over there. I know they took them out of commission with the euro, but I know the coins are still floating. How long in the future do I need to think about maybe cashing those in?
Well, the question is, how long can you hold your breath? It's going to be a while, to be candid with you. First of all, a lot of those coins were demonetized when they went to the euro. So they actually have no intrinsic value to the country. Certain pieces, if you have enough, you can take it to the central banks in the country, but literally physically, and then they will exchange it for euros. If it's the 70s and 80s, they were made by the tens of millions. And so the odds of there being anything is going to be based on specifics of the coin itself. But the odds of being able to cash in any time in the near future are really pretty remote, candidly.
There are...
I was just curious. There are
some places where you can sell these things, though, but it's literally pennies on the dollar.
And dealers in this country will very frequently pay you by the pound.
Yes.
Literally.
Kiloware.
Yeah.
So I guess hang on to them.
Hang on. And if you've got kids, nephews, nieces, they're, like Bob was explaining to that little girl, Meadow, it's a great way for the kids to learn about what things looked like. And there's great history, in particularly the European coins, because you used to have the Italian coins had wonderful imagery on them.
Yeah, before the New World Order took over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bingo. There you go.
Let's take a break here, and thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. David Tripp and Bob Scott here, the home stretch, straight ahead. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's the Coin and Stamp Show today. David Tripp and Bob Scott are here to answer your questions. And before we get back to the phones, we'll take care of a couple of emails. This one is from S. We'll just say S. My wife has recently made a summer project of rolling her pennies from an old penny jar. Her collection spans from 1909 to the mid-80s. Are there specific unique pennies we should be on the lookout for?
Well, not unique, but there are better dates. The classic dates would be 1909S for San Francisco, which would be right below. And then underneath the bust of Lincoln would be VDB, Victor David Brenner, who was the designer. The 1909 SVDB, always a good coin to find, the $200.
Yeah.
1914 with a little D beneath, another one of the classic rarities. If you go to 1955, try and get one that looks like it's blurred, a double die. It's the classic rarity that we all looked for when we were kids. And then the 1943. Look for 1943, and if you've got one that's copper and not silvery colored, bingo, you might have hit, six to seven figures.
Okay.
You betcha.
For that.
It's the copper one, not the zinc one.
All right.
And they do turn up. Another one was discovered.
What year was that?
1943.
All right. I'll be on the lookout for that.
All righty.
I'll go through every coin I own as soon as the program is done.
And then the retirement will be shortly thereafter?
Payments of certain fees to consultants.
Right. Unlikely. Jessica wrote, "My name is Jessica, and this question is for Bob Scott. My grandfather passed away a whole blank ago, just this whole ago, and my grandmother is ready to look into selling his extensive stamp collection. He has many big binders filled with stamps he collected for over 60 years. How do we go about selling them? Is there a good resource to start our research?" That's the key, the research.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Well, we would obviously be... every collection is a lot of stamps in a big binder,
right. Usually
several big binders.
Yeah.
And usually the best thing to do is collectors have this habit of making a fuss whenever they've got anything that's interesting. They'll put notes there. They'll do something.
Yeah.
Look, first of all, just look through them. And see if there's something written down. See if somebody's made notes of prices they paid.
Okay.
If they're generally all nice, bright colors, chances are it's not going to be very valuable.
So the duller it is, the more valuable it has a chance of being.
That's a good rule of thumb.
That's pretty much the rule in public radio as well, as a matter of fact.
That's right. Let's add some color to this.
This one is from Mark. "I have a collection of pre-1950 quarters. How can I find out if they're worth anything more than the original 25 cents? And is there any particular quarter from a given year I should be looking out for?" And that is from Mark.
Already.
Pre-1950.
Well, pre-1950, by definition, they're going to be worth more because they're made of silver.
Okay.
Silver is trading currently at $16. Do the math. $4.50 or something like that a piece.
Yeah. So basically five bucks a piece to start. Well, let's say four.
1932 is the key date
that
you want to be looking for. D&S are always better.
1932.
Right.
And why?
Because there are fewer of them that went into circulation. Fewer were struck.
All right. Back to the phones. And Paul in New Paltz. Paul, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
We found a coin dated 1794 at the Sean Gum Reformed Church via metal detector.
Great.
And it's a copper penny.
Yeah.
And it's large, and it has Miss Liberty on it.
It does.
It has Miss Liberty on it.
Yep.
The Statue of Liberty. The question is, was it minted in this country in 1794, or was it minted in England?
No, it was minted in Philadelphia, in this country, last I heard. I was down there last week, and it was still part of this country. and actually, 1794 is one of the classic dates of, that's what we call a large cent, and there are various varieties of them, and they have different values. You found this in the ground. Is it really corroded? Is it in...
It wasn't that corroded. It was about 8 inches down in the ground. Apparently, a man, woman, or child walking into church at that particular time in history must have dropped it in the ground.
Yeah.
And we were able to, it's in the library at the Sean Gum Reformed Church.
Wonderful. If it's an average variety, it's going to be worth, in really crummy condition that you can barely identify it, it's still going to be worth a couple hundred dollars.
Oh, nice.
And if it's in decent condition, you may be looking closer to $1,000. And there are some very rare varieties of 1794. It is the the dies that they made them from were made by hand then, and they were broken, and so they made more of them. And
right.
there are more dies made in 1794. There are collectors who only collect the pennies of 1794.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
Now, the other question quickly is, when did coins first appear on the horizon of history?
In the Western world, we will go back to Turkey. It will be the 7th century B.C., which is when the first coins were made. They were made of a metal called electrum, which is a naturally forming alloy of gold and silver. And they just had little scratchy marks on them. The reason we have designs on coins goes back to that period. And basically, as they started going into circulation, the ruler of the area, the king, the chieftain, whomever, would put his personal seal on, much like a wax seal or something like that, only this would be impressed into the gold or electrum. And that was basically guaranteeing its weight, because the weight of the metal was how the value was determined.
I see.
And that's how design started, and that's how the birth of coinage really was.
All right. Now, do you have any of these originals with the scratches on them?
In my pocket?
No. But
They do exist.
In great quantity or just a few?
Reasonable quantities. Lots of these things are still being excavated legally and illegally in Turkey. Hmm. And they do appear on the market every now and again. Yeah.
All right. Over to Steve. Steve in Saugerties, you're on.
Hiya, Ray, David, Bob. I'm Italian, and I've got some 1934 paper U.S. currency.
Yep.
A $50 bill and a $100 bill, and I only say it's gangster money because of the date and because I'm an Italian, and one is from Chicago and one is from New York.
Nice.
I like that, but 50 and 100s, those are, I mean, it's better to have those. I mean, those, it's going to depend on the condition largely with those things, but you know, they're small size bills, and they're probably going to be worth about, you know, unless they're in pristine condition, they're going to be worth, you know, a $50 bill will be more worth about $60 to $70. $100 bill, probably $110 to $150, something in that range. Don't spend them, but they're just, they haven't really caught yet.
Gotcha.
All righty.
Good to know.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Over
you
to...
kind of want the higher dollar values from 34, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, you sure do, yes.
Yes, because I think, was that the last time they went to 10,000?
They did indeed.
Ooh, that would be a good one to find.
Yeah, that's worth 40 or 50 grand, yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Let's go to Marie in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Marie, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We are renovating our newly purchased 200-year-old house and found a 1835 penny between the studs, and I'm just wondering what kind of value it might have.
Okay, again, as always, what is our mantra? Condition. So is it clearly identifiable, heavily worn, not so worn?
No, it's in pretty good shape.
Pretty good shape. So we'll say fine to very fine condition. Again, as we were talking about 1794, there are various varieties, but a common variety, a dealer would probably pay between $50 and $75
for an 1835.
1835, yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yep, not bad at all.
Okay,
It's not going to pay for the house. I'm sorry, Marie.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Probably pay for a bandsaw.
Well, there you go.
Right? Let's go to Brandon in Springfield, Massachusetts. Brandon.
Hey, Brandon.
Good afternoon,
Hi.
Gentlemen.
Hi there.
I was wondering. I just recently returned from Denmark. Mm-hmm. And some of the krona, the currency that I have there,
and some
of it had holes within the center of the coins. I noticed this is sort of a aesthetic choice among, I think, old Italian or Spanish currency as well, and even in East Asia.
I'm
just wondering today, is this just
an affectation.
A callback to like an earlier day is like an aesthetic choice, or do they hold some intrinsic purpose?
It is an affectation. There is no intrinsic. Some of the Oriental ones, they were actually strung together. It was a way that people kept them. But there's no, at least that I'm aware of, and somebody's probably going to Google me and prove me wrong, but the modern coins, there's certainly absolutely no logical reason for it at this point.
All right. All
righty.
Thanks a lot for the call. Right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bob Scott, does it ever irritate you that most of the calls are about coins every time? Not so much, because I get to learn. I listen to David. Yes,
very much. He actually catches a few Z's.
I thought
And yes, the chairs. Since we first started doing this, 10 years ago, the
chairs have improved.
They're far more comfortable. We get glasses of water.
You see, it's a full service public radio station nowadays,
exactly, as it should be.
Great place.
And we go to Laura. Laura in Amherst, you're on.
Hi, I'm wondering if Meadow is still listening, because I'd like to offer my stamp collection.
Oh, how lovely.
What a good idea.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We really don't want to give personal info out on the air, but you can email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. And if Meadow also does that, we'll try to hook you two up, okay?
Yep,
voxpop@wamc.org.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot for that.
And I hope Meadow gets a present.
Oh, that's
that would be lovely.
Well, I think so too. And you know, we may not got terribly many calls for the stamps, but we may have just created a new collector.
There we
which
go.
Is
which,
actually
which
worth
is going
it.
To keep you going in your dotage.
Very much so.
And over to Mickey in Amherst. Mickey, you're on.
Hi there. I'm going through an old family coin collection, and one of the coins that I found looks interesting. It's an 1880 shield nickel in, like, perfect, probably like a proof type coin. How do I figure out?
It's 1880.
Yes.
Okay, and it will be. That's a rare year, to be honest with you.
You say it's
in perfect condition.
Yes.
I mean, perfect is relative in coins, as we all know.
Right.
My first suggestion to you, because of the rarity of the coin, which we will get to in a second, will be ultimately to have it. It's going to have to be encapsulated, i.e., you're going to have to send it to a third-party system company. The two biggest ones are the Professional Coin Grading Service and NGC, which is Numismatic Guarantee Corporation. You can get them on the internet. If you send your coin in or take it to a local dealer, they will send it in for you. Depending on the grade, which is based on a number of 0 to 70, its value will move dramatically. But to give you an idea, in really crummy condition, if it's an 1880 shield, it's going to be worth about $1,000, $1,200.
Yikes!
Okay. If it is, you said absolutely pristine condition?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, an uncirculated MS60 is going to be worth $10,000 to $12,000.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
So take a really good photograph of it
before you send it
in.
And if it's in really nice mint condition, you could be talking upwards of $50,000 to $100,000.
Here's the thing. Now, here's Mr. Paranoid Ray. Send this, and how would I be sure that it doesn't get heisted?
It's registered insured mail. But that's why I say find a local dealer. And if you actually go to the PCGS site or NGC site, they will tell you their dealers that are that work in their system. And if you take it to them, it'll be a small charge, and then you will pay X amount to have the coin graded. They will take care of the insurance and everything else for you. You'll pay a portion for that. But Bob hit it on the head. Take good photographs of it before you send it.
Why would we do that?
It's
known as security.
Yes, and a better security is take a photograph in proximity to something that is personal to you, such as your driver's license.
But it's a potentially extremely valuable coin. They've sold for over $100,000.
Wow, Mickey, thanks a lot, and congratulations on that one. Our number is 800-348-2551. Sue in Ballston Spa. Sue, you're on.
Oh, great. First of all, I have, going back to my dad, and I'm the daughter, and then we, between us, collected a lot of American stamps and the commemorative.
Yes.
For instance, and I just want to know, are they worth anything? I mean, I have Ronald Reagan and things like that. I just, at a whole plate.
Are we talking about really stamps? You were collecting these during the 1980s?
Right. Well, later.
Later.
So the 80s and the
90s. I would say 1950. He worked with my daughter, and then somehow it got passed back to me.
Okay, so it's sort of 1950s onwards?
Yes.
My advice would be to hold on to them. They're just at the moment, there's an overabundant supply of them. And if you were to sell them, even the plate blocks and sheets, because the postage rate now is 50 cents. Yeah. And most of your stamps are going to be 5, 8, 3, 5, 8, 10 cents, which means to actually use them as postage, you have to use an awful lot.
And there's not enough room then to put the address on the envelope.
Well, it does sort of get to that point of view. But it's going to need it. You're going to have to hold on to them for a little while longer before you actually get some value, because at the moment they're not actually worth their face value.
Oh, boy.
One other thing I have is a whole hamper full of stamps. I cannot even lift them. They came back to me again.
Are they used or unused?
Is there anyone? No, they're not. And some of them are in a book that my dad did.
Okay.
But is there anyone in the area? Because I know you're way above coming to see things.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, we really don't do that sort of business connection either. But there are places that you can find that are local to Ballston Spa.
Yes, there are. Even though it's a very heavy basket and it seems to have lots of things in it, it's probably not worth too terribly much.
But you never know. No.
Actually, yes, you do.
No, you don't. You know what? Here you go. It's the end of the show. Thanks, Sue.
He's
we're
a
done.
Killjoy, you know?
No, you bring us down. It's the end of the program. You want a feel-good moment, and there's Bob. It's not worth a darn thing. It kind of questions, you question your existence.
But the problem is, it is stamps from the 1950s, and I learned a long time ago that you really have to tell people the truth.
All right. The truth is we're done for time. And support comes from Hooked Seafood Company, Latham, fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, lobster rolls, whole belly clams, fish and chips available, HookedSeafoodINC.com. Park Building at Millwork, Schenectady, offering millwork, flooring, kitchen and bath designs and more, providing staff, large displays, samples and design ideas, ParkBuildingAtMillwork.com. Patricia Dalton Funnell, producer at the Jazz Colleagues, announcing the Phil Allen Concert Jazz Band CD release, North Greenbush Blues, August 31st at 8 p.m., Cafe Lena, Saratoga Springs, patriciadaltonjazz.com. At Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Well, that's it for the big program. Thanks again to David Tripp and Bob Scott for joining us today. Thank you for being here and the great questions. Thanks to Zach, our engineer, Susie Chekai, the phone screener, Jim Lavoulis, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk travel. Stand by now for news.